Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. My answers are posted every week on Mondays, and you can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask me, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. I am back with Yaron Brook, the executive director of the Ayn Rand Institute. We're having a discussion of the Bin Laden event and situation. This is part two. We've already discussed controversial aspects of the actual facts, how he was caught, why he was killed, what should have been done. And now I want to discuss with Dr. Brooks some of the reactions that I've seen to his capture and killing, both negative reactions and positive reactions, and ask him some questions about them. Now, first of all, from the left, the far left, there was dismay. As I heard, it was always couched in legal terms. No due process, no trial by a jury of his peers, no chance for an appellate court, etc., etc. Here is this man just summarily executed. Isn't that anti-American, against the Constitution, barbaric?
Well, this is typical of the radical left and of much of the left. If you remember right after 9/11, what the left called for was that this was a police action, that the way to deal with terrorism was to send basically the FBI and maybe some CIA to capture these guys, bring them to the United States and try them. The Obama administration came in with the idea of shutting down Guantanamo, bringing all the prisoners into the U.S. and into our legal system and having real trials. So this isn't even a radical left. This is just the left's approach. And their approach is that our civil rights, the right to a jury trial, the right to, you know, all the rights pertaining to search and seizure, and to, you know, are not just for Americans, do not just apply within the limits of American jurisdiction, but should be applied to all human beings on the planet. And that is ludicrous. While it's true that everybody has individual rights, not everybody has civil rights. Civil rights only apply to citizens of the United States. And people who are not citizens and who are engaged in violence against the United States are, you know, they call them combatants during the war or soldiers or terrorists of an offending nation. And this includes the civilians of the offending nation or the offending organization. They have no civil rights in this context. And we need to do whatever is necessary, morally and politically. We need to do whatever is necessary to stop them from killing Americans. That is the one role of the U.S. government. It's to protect our rights, our lives, and our property, and to do whatever is necessary to do so.
I just want to add what I think is, what is the answer? People say, well, that's arbitrary. Why should we restrict civil rights to the United States? The reason is, the presumption is that citizens of the United States have given their allegiance to the government and the commitment to obey the laws. It's a compact implicitly between all the citizens who are, in a proper world, they hired the government and they're paying the money to get the service. If you see someone who violates that, then of course you put them in jail. But otherwise, this is the way we're treated because we are in this situation. Someone outside, by the definition, whether they're French or in the Middle East or whatever, are not part of that. They don't owe allegiance to this government or its laws. They may very well follow the laws, but that is not inherent in their status. And consequently, they're not part of the country. Therefore, they cannot expect those prerogatives that come from the specific people who form and sustain that country. So it's not at all arbitrary. It's a reward for having a good country. It doesn't apply to the people who don't belong to that country.
I think that's right. And I don't think that's a uniquely objectivist point. I think that's in the founding of this country, and it's in the legal tradition of this country. We don't in America treat citizens, and no country treated citizens the same way it treats foreigners.
Okay, then that leads us to the next question. Didn't we violate the rights of Pakistan? As there's a whole group of people saying, here's a sovereign nation. We basically committed war. We invaded their property, grabbed off one of their citizens or guests. Is that legitimate? What would we think if somebody did that to us?
Well, I would view this the opposite. I view this as the Pakistanis committed an act of war against the United States by shielding bin Laden, by helping al-Qaeda, and they have for many, many years, by shielding the Taliban. Pakistan is engaged in an act of war against the United States and has been, you know, for well over a decade because it's been supportive, actively supportive of our enemy. Again, the United States' responsibility is to protect the lives of citizens. Now, look, if bin Laden was hiding in Israel or France or Germany, an ally of the United States, a government that we trusted that would take care of the problem, we would probably have informed that government. I think it would be completely appropriate for us to inform the government. The Israelis or the French or whoever would have gone in and killed him or captured him for us. Well, and that would have been completely appropriate. But Pakistan is not a country that is a friend of the United States. It's not a country that we should trust. And therefore, we need to take matters into our own hands.
Can you explain then this is a rhetorical question. How come they treat it as an enemy, but they officially classify it as an ally? The American government poured billions into it. They know that it's a Pakistani military compound, and it's still our ally. According to what I read, one reason is that it's strategically indispensable for the war in Afghanistan.
The reason is that the United States has no foreign policy. It has no principles guiding its foreign policy, and it wants to have its cake and eat it in many, many respects. We give Pakistan $3 billion a year. We arm it. We sell it weapons. At the same time, we know that they are funding the Taliban and helping the Taliban, that they're protecting bin Laden and others in al-Qaeda. They capture a few terrorists on occasion to appease us. You know, we have no principles guiding us in our foreign policy. We won't call countries our enemies. We won't call countries explicitly our allies. There is no good and evil ultimately. So, this is a horrific foreign policy. It is what's got us to the place where we are today. And the only reason that we should worry about Pakistan, I do think we need to worry about Pakistan more so than Afghanistan, which is a nothing. It's insignificant. Is because Pakistan has nuclear weapons. They have a lot of nuclear weapons. And the real fear is that the nuclear weapons fall into the hands of the Islamic totalitarians, who are the real enemy of the United States. And therefore, we need to have a strategic, principled foreign policy vis-a-vis Pakistan.
Do they think that giving $3 billion a year will prevent the Pakistanis from giving them the nuclear weapons?
So they think by giving $3 billion, we promote the more moderate elements in Pakistan, who are not our friend, but are more moderate and therefore not interested in blowing up the world and preventing it from falling into the hands of the nuts who would blow up the world.
How does the $3 billion promote a moderate Pakistan?
Because it provides a financial incentive, because they're lining their own pockets, they're lining their own...
So we're buying our allies.
Oh, there's no question we're buying the allies. Look, this is how we won, in quotes.
In other words, our foreign policy
is to buy out our enemy.
A country of gangsters who want to give to worse gangsters the weapons to annihilate us, and our solution is to give them money and beg them each year not to do it.
This is how we so-called won in Iraq. We paid suitcases worth of cash to the Sunni nuts in order to protect us from other Sunni nuts. We're buying the love of the Afghans by building them hospitals and sewer systems and so on. Our foreign policy is to buy, why did we give $3 billion to Mubarak for decades every year? in order to buy the love of the Muslim world so they wouldn't blow us up. That is Afan Balsa.
You know, some that have to do a different interview on what would you do to get from where we are to a proper foreign policy? What country would you knock off in what order?
I'd be happy to.
But we have to go on for this one. Here's another reaction, which is put forth in the name of Christianity, insofar as that's distinct from the left. This is quoting from Der Spiegel, a German publication on May 6th. This one, really, I couldn't believe. A Hamburg judge has filed a criminal complaint against Chancellor Angela Merkel for, quote, endorsing a crime, unquote, after she stated that she was, quote, glad that Osama bin Laden was killed by U.S. forces. Politicians, including those within her own center-right is like Republican coalition, said that no death was cause for celebration and reproved her remark as unchristian and vengeful. Now, when I first read that, I thought, boy, Germany is a rotten, rotten country if the center-right people take that attitude. But I now begin to think that it's not just Germany, because a few days later in the Wall Street Journal, there was an article, I can't remember the guy's name, it was an article by a Briton, saying that the whole essence of it was, I'm deeply ashamed of my country, Great Britain, for their reaction to the capture of bin Laden. And he gave quotes and data from the top, you know, intellectuals, the BBC and the government, all the way through the rag sheets, the yellow journalism, the general public, all just a wave of people, anti-American, you know, cowboys shoot from the hip, no respect for life, think they can throw their weight around, you know, no appreciation or respect for others. It was so broad a sentiment that the guy himself said that he had been proud of England a week before during the wedding, and now he's ashamed and he wants to apologize. So it's not just Germany, it's Europe.
It's Europe. It's very much Europe. This is European guilt. This is Europe, blaming all the problems in the world on the West, on themselves, on the Americans. The Americans are the primary target, actually, in Israel, right? All the problems in the world are caused by Western values, by freedom, the claim that we in the West have a superior culture. This is multiculturalism at the extreme. Yeah, yeah. And it's the decadence of Europe. And this is why the radical Islamists really believe they have a shot at taking over Europe. Not by military means, by just peacefully, just slowly eroding all the Western values that still exist in Europe and taking over the place. They are egalitarian, you know, in a way that it's hard to believe. They believe that a murderer, a butcher, like bin Laden,
yeah,
you know, is equal to any one of this,
yeah,
you know, law-abiding citizens, and that anybody who dared to kill somebody like that is as much a monster as any murderer in the street. And their hatred for America is so deep that no facts, no evidence will make any difference. They hate us.
I knew that was true, and some of them. Britain really shocked me, because it's been, as far as I can tell, the best ally in practice, the greatest supporter,
there,
or not.
There is a substantial element within British society that hates, that is West hating, that still feels guilty for the empire, the British Empire that caused all these problems supposedly in the world, and that is hates America and the left, but even part of the center, this liberal party that is part of the government right now, has elements within it that are radically anti-American and anti-Israel. And it's just horrifying to see how low.
It really shocked me. I mean, that's one of the most biggest shocks I got. How far down the road they are. All right, let me give you one negative reaction from a number of Americans. And that was, we have enraged the terrorists now. We've provoked them. They're foaming at the mouth, and they're going to come at us. We've asked, in effect, for retaliation, and so that Obama's made the situation very bad.
I mean, in a sense, they're right. In this sense, that if this is all we do, if this pinprick of action, I mean, I'm very happy Bin Laden's dead and so on, but this pinprick, it's in a big picture, it's meaningless. Terrorism is going to continue. We haven't identified the enemy. We refuse to name the enemy. We continue to appease them. We continue to play games. We refuse to actually identify the countries responsible and to destroy them. In that sense, yeah, terrorism, you know, there's a likelihood that terrorism will increase. But just imagine, after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, American intellectuals coming out and say, we've really upset the Japanese now. They're going to really go after us. And look at the historical facts. The historical facts are that Japan is one of our best allies today, that the Japanese are incredibly friendly towards us today. There's also real evidence with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and you can graph this, that when Israel got tough and went after terrorists and killed them and showed them that it would not succumb, terrorism declined dramatically. When Israel sat down and negotiated with them and appeased them, terrorism increased dramatically. Terrorists are motivated by our weakness. They are motivated by the idea that they can be successful. If they were to be convinced that they didn't have a shred of a chance to bring about their vision of world domination or their vision of the destruction of the United States and the West, they would stop. They would, you know, the people on the fence would move away from them. Right now, the people on the fence are backing them because they see a weakness. Mm-hmm. This thing with Bin Laden was too weak. That was the problem. It sent too weak of a message to the Muslim world, and therefore it will embolden more radicalism. What we need to be is a lot stronger, a lot tougher, and that's what will finally, you know, destroy their will to attack us.
Okay, now just a few more. The lionization of Obama. Of course, he captured the enemy. But what about the fact that he campaigned and voted when he was a senator against enhanced interrogation? The Justice Department right now, Holder, has got a criminal investigation against the people who conducted the operation which led to Bin Laden. Obama has been an appeaser. Everyone can see that. A total capitulator to terrorism. So you have to ask yourself, no matter if you're a truck driver or a professor, what would a president, no matter what his views are, have to do if they came to him and said, we found Obama. Is he going to say, leave him alone, I don't want to interfere? He's got to say, take him out. Why in the world, and the country must know that. Yeah. The country, I mean, anyone with a brain has to know that. How can they lionize and love him when it's a situation where he is opposed capturing a guy and had no choice but to kill him? That is unintelligible.
Well, I don't know how much they lionize and love him. He got a bump in the polls, but I think it's going to be very temporary.
Somebody told me 10%.
Yeah, 10% by some polls, which is low for this kind of event historically. Other polls showed it was only 2%. So it was somewhere between 2 and 10%. But that's not a lot. Look, Americans, particularly those 10%, are very concrete bound. It's day to day. But look, some Americans didn't believe he would do it. Some Americans thought that if that information was revealed to a weakling like Obama, he would turn the other cheek and walk away and pretend he didn't know anything. Just the fact that he would do it, I think, told Americans that he's not as bad as some people thought he was, which was horrific. But look, there's no question. The American people are very concrete bound. Unfortunately, you know, many Americans don't look at the long term. But there are Americans out there who still don't trust Obama, who still are suspicious of him. And I think after he gives this Middle East talk, which he's going to give, I think, this coming week, I think his poll numbers are going to go back down because the obvious appeasement of his administration will become clear again to the Americans.
I don't know. To me, these things are clear from the speech, the first speech Bush gave, told you everything after 9/11, and the first speech Obama gave, if you translate it into English, was exactly this. Look at the great things I achieved. Now we as a country can achieve socialism.
Yeah, no,
that's what it means.
And Obama certainly suggested that. Obama's suggestion was, now that we've done this, we as the state, can do anything. And he's certainly talking about fixing the economy, you know, Medicare, you know, Obamacare and everything, or socializing the country. And I think there's definitely an intent. But I think the country's response to Bush was a lot more worrisome than the country's response to Obama and sustained itself for longer. I agree with you. He was weak from his first speech on.
Okay, I just want a few concluding points here. What's the American public's attitude toward the U.S. terrorist threat now? Do they think it's safer or what? And this is what I read. A Gallup survey found that 54% of respondents believe bin Laden's death will make the U.S. safer from terrorism. And 73% said they were more confident the United States can win the war on terrorism. Can you explain this?
Yes, they have no clue what the war on terrorism is. And here I blame, squarely our leadership, political and intellectual, for not explaining what this war is really about. First of all, it's not a war on terrorism. There's no such thing. There can be. You can't have a war on a tactic. Right. It's a war on totalitarian Islam. And nobody's explained that to them, and they're not aware of it. And I find...
So even so, why do they think killing the leader is going to stop the worldwide movement? It's the same idea that if you kill Hitler... that ends Nazism.
Well,
there's about 10 people in the wings waiting to take his place.
No, we know that, and I think that's right. But again, it goes to the concrete boundness of so many Americans, and at the margin, if we continued and we did the right things, killing Bin Laden is a good thing and is a positive step in the war on terrorism.
What is the killing of Bin Laden and the country and everybody's reaction? What is the net effect, if any, in terms of your expectation? Are we safer, less safe, or it's irrelevant?
Well, in the short term, we're certainly safer because it disrupts their network. It makes it more difficult for them to commit. There's going to be a battle for leadership. I think in the long term, the threat is only growing. And the threat is not just from the Bin Laden types who are going to use planes to blow up buildings. But the threat is from the Muslim Brotherhood taking over whole countries so-called democratically. The threat is from the whole uprisings in the Middle East, which are led to a large extent, and I fear this is going to come true, by radical Islamists who are going to present a much more substantial, much more radicalized threat to the United States in the distant future than Bin Laden ever did. And we have no idea. This administration or any Republican administration at this point have no idea how to deal with that threat.
Okay, we're running out of time, but I just have to ask you this last question. 9/11 was approximately equivalent to Pearl Harbor in terms of the damage and the death. And it didn't do anything except rhetoric and phony wars. What event could you project would, if it happened, lead us to war against this crowd? Is there anything you can project?
I think I learned from you.
Yeah.
The fact that people do not learn from experience. Facts don't change people's minds because they are so molded by the ideas that they reshape their experiences, they reshape the facts to suit them. I don't think it's a matter of scale. I don't think if you killed 30,000 Americans, the response will be different than if you killed 3,000.
What if Iran dropped a nuclear bomb on New York and annihilated the
whole? If it was Iran, and we knew exactly there was Iran, and you could say we're now at war with Iran, then yeah, we would probably invade Iran and take it over and thrash them. We'd still bring them democracy, and we'd still do it in a very nice way. We wouldn't win it, we wouldn't fight it like we should be fighting it. But if it was a terrorist organization, if it wasn't a state, nothing, I don't believe anything would change. If a nuke went off tomorrow and we couldn't identify where the nuke came from, but it was Al-Qaeda, it was Muslim Brotherhood or whatever, I don't believe that fundamentally the American view of the situation would change. Remember that Bush had 75% approval rating and it could have done anything after 9/11, and he did nothing because...
So people would stomach even that?
I think they would. I just don't see what would change in their conception about what America is and what the world is that would generate that. I think they'd be more open to our educational efforts, just like they were thinking after 9/11, but there's so much work to do before we get the American people to the point where they are self-assertive enough to actually win and fight a proper war. I don't think anything can be done in the short term to change that.
We have to draw a line here. I want to thank you. If anybody in the whole world is doing the work that you're talking about, you are number one in quantity and quality.
Thank you.
on behalf of the rest of the world that still wants to survive, thank you very much for being my guest today.
Thank you.
If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most famous novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. Thanks for listening.